Carpet Service International against the Chicago Regional Council of Carpenters is our next case. Mr. Smetana.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Gerard Smetana for the plaintiff appellants. There are essentially two questions before Your Honor. I mean, I'm sure there are many others we could think about. There is the question of the correctness of the Court's finding with respect to the secondary boycott issues, and secondly, the correctness of the Court's finding with regard to the assault and battery and the supplemental state claims and intentional infliction. With regard to the first claim, the secondary boycott, the Court actually credits the threat made by Mr. Ryan, the union business representative, on July 28 of Mr. Ferraro, the construction manager for the neutral. He made a double threat. He said, get rid of the primary CSI. And if you don't, if you ever use them again, we're going to pick at you, essentially. With regard to those threats, causation is clearly met. As a result of the first threat, the neutral put the primary on night work because he had already been shut down for 20 days. And actually, Mr. Ryan testified in his examination that that shut the job down for the 10 days, I should say, misspoke, and also shut the job down again, where the picketing started just the day before. So it was down for a while. The second, as a result of the second threat, Mr. Ferraro took away a future job. And there's no question that he did that, and he testified in the last cross-examination question by the counsel for the union. The Court actually credited Mr. Ferraro on that issue and said that the business agent, Mr. Ryan here, was flippant in denying that he did try to shut it down. The error of the Court is the Court somehow, without ever saying so, limits, as really the union's counsel had encouraged him, whether the threats, well, he didn't even discuss threats qua threats, but whether the picketing was in compliance with Moore Dry Dock. Of course, as we know, the Moore Dry Dock standards are a rule of evidence and can be rebutted, and we say these threats clearly rebutted it. Now,
I guess the big problem I have with a lot of your arguments, and it really almost doesn't break down the way you did it, is that it seems to me you're just re-arguing credibility determinations that were made at the district court, and that's not what we sit to revise.
Well, no, I don't believe. Well, I will try to answer your question, Your Honor. I won't certainly get into an argument. The court immediately after crediting Mr. Ryan, Mr. Ferraro on the neutral, then proceeds to say that, but he didn't stop doing business, which is a question of law. The court is in error because the court totally ignores our briefs on Burns and Rowe, the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Operating Engineers Local 825, Justice Marshall's decision that you can change the way you do business, and the change here is actually articulated by Mr. Ryan to go on night work. So that's the error.
The district court finds, though, that CSI keeps on working during some days.
Well, no, that's factually an error. Mr. Pietro Molfesi, the lead man, testified clearly that after July 28, they worked for about 10, 12 days. That's why they were there again on August 19, days later.
The court says, Rocco Molfesi's testimony did not establish that there were no CSI workers on the job during the day after August 19. What? Various witnesses, including Molfesi himself, testified that CSI workers worked during the day after the picketing began.
Well, she discredited everything that Mr. Molfesi, Rocco Molfesi, said. The point is, I'm saying that the question is not, that goes to the Moore Dry Dock standards, Your Honor. I'm talking about the threat. And I'm saying there were four threats here made. Well, the two threats on July 28, the specific threat by the union steward to Mr. Cruz, telling us to get rid of these people, and these threats were exactly the same as the neutral had on July in the first picketing in June. So the issue is not the picketing, and the issue is not. I'm willing to concede that, Your Honor, your question. I'm willing to concede, the question is, this case turns on independent threats, and they have to be considered by the court. And there isn't any question about that. Let me turn to the second issue, Your Honor, and that is with regard to the assault and battery. On August 19, Mr. Malfisi's here, not only when he arrives, he's blocked. That's a violation, at least of 8B1A, and certainly shows a tendency of violence. After the blocking the morning of August 19, as the business agent who engages in the alleged assault and battery is confronted with Mr. Malfisi trying to show his contract because he's trying to solve his problem, saying, look, the picket's wrong. You say on strike, no contract. We have a contract. Here's the contract. But as you know from the record, the union business agent said, it's a BS union. I'm not going to look at it. Forget it. So Malfisi puts the contract in his car. He leaves it face up. The business agent tries to read it. He goes to the car, turns it over, and at that point, the assault and battery happens.
I'm looking at page 28 of the court's opinion, which is entitled Credibility Findings.
Yes.
It's quite a few pages, starting
at
page 23,
yes,
that recount the various different versions of what happened. And so the court's faced with an obvious, resolve what happened.
The court is totally...
And concludes that Malfisi did not prove his allegation that Ryan intentionally hit or kneed him.
Okay, well, let's look and
see
what...
Explain why.
Okay. Well, I'm very familiar with the
I'm sure you are, as are we, and I'm just saying it's a he said, he said, he said kind
of situation.
No,
it's not that, Your Honor. In all
yes,
fairness,
it is.
Well, let me point out in the second paragraph of page 28, what the court does is try to discredit Mr. Pietro Malfisi, who actually saw everything, heard everything, and was a total witness.
So what? Let me finish.
Okay. I'm telling you so what in a minute. She uses, in the next paragraph, she uses Mr. Ed Sexton, who was there with the business agent, and basically says, basically repeats a denial that the union counsel obtained from him, saying he didn't see Malfisi being hit or kicked. What she totally misses, and is clear in the record, this witness, Sexton, was 50 feet away, admits he didn't hear anything, he couldn't see anything, and then the other part of the credibility determination the court makes there is that she attributes she attributes that nothing happened, that we were not telling the truth, because she said they were effing each other and cussing each other out. In fact, Your Honor, Mr. Sexton specifically said, no, when was asked about the argument, he said, no, they were just arguing. No cussing. No, there's absolutely no confirmation. Moreover, Your Honor, also, everything that happened on August 19, there's absolutely no confirmation. In fact, just the opposite. Ryan says, and so does Sexton, for that matter, they went up to see Ferraro on that day. Ferraro was there. Cruz was there. They say it did not happen on that day. The same conversation that, in fact, the court credits on July 28, they try to say that as Ryan and Sexton try to say occurred again, and he asked about the contract. So everything Ryan said on that day, including saying that he didn't, he walked away when he saw the open heart surgery, the stitches, and the stitches were fresh, he said he didn't do it. Now we say that very evidence, the reason it was asked, that I asked it originally in my deposition, is because that was to show malice. I mean, if someone just has had open heart surgery, you can still see the stitches are fresh, and then you kick him and cause the problem, that's clear malice. Now, there's no question that Mr. Malfisi was hurt. He was sitting there when both Ryan when Ferraro and Cruz came, and he was injured. His doctor clearly saw it because they opened the door, even though we had no expert. His doctor clearly found that he had injuries of 10 out of 10 a few days later. And so there's no question he was hurt. How did he get hurt? You can't kick yourself. What the court found was that this was simply a continuation of recovery from the open heart surgery. That's preposterous. The record is totally to the contrary. It was a year later. So we're saying that factually, if you really look, and I put it in my briefs, Your Honor, if you really look at the record, apart from what the court's conclusions, they're erroneous. And the court, in her conclusions, on the same pages you talk about, 28 and 29, imagines what would have happened. She imagines that this is probably what happened because my client was angry, and he was angry. The one who was angry, the only one who shows any anger here, is Ryan. He starts out by pulling the plug out of the seaming machine on July 28th, stops the job. His pickets then block our way. He's the one who does all the cussing. No one else does, and the court, in fact, found him to be flippant. How does he all of a sudden become the white knight? If he was the white knight that he says he was, he walked away when I saw the stitches, I walked away. Why does he say then after that, because nothing happened, that he says that Malfesi came running up to the office and said, the guy just gave me a heart attack. Malfesi immediately, if you look at the police record, called 911. The police was there within 10 minutes. This is sort of corroborated by Sexton. And I'm saying it just didn't happen the way the court said, and the record supports what I say. I'd like to turn briefly to damages and the remedies that I seek, Your Honor. With regard to the remedy for the AP4, the secondary boycott, we believe the record clearly shows that we did have night work. She may say it wasn't. We have our testimony of Ms. Ray, and we show we paid it. We have the tax returns for the year 2008 showing we paid $95,700 for occasional labor. It's, I think, Exhibit F. And then we show we paid Rocco Malfesi for being a supervisor because Mr. Carmen, his father, was injured and couldn't work. So we have those injuries. We also believe, and the court in footnote 18 on page 44 specifically claimed that we're not entitled to attorney's fees. She miscites, well, most cases, in fact. She miscites Justice Marshall's another decision we cite, Summit Valley. I happen to have been in that case earlier. I mean, I know. No, Summit Valley was limited to not permitting attorney's fees in a 303 case if the merits of the case are tried before the NLRB. Here the merits were clearly tried in the district court, and therefore we are entitled, if the court so finds, the motion was never ruled upon, and that position is supported by the First Circuit in Abreen, decided actually the same year after Summit Valley, and there they awarded attorney's fees. It's the only case I've seen since that time. And finally, with regard to the punitive damage issue, also the court raises in that same footnote 18. They say Teamsters v. Morton, Teamsters Local 20 v. Morton, only is for compensatory damage. That's true unless there's violence. And I'm saying this case is violence. If you read 2 pages before the end of the Teamster case, they actually cite that we are entitled, including punitive damages, for recovery, punitive damages for the pendent claims, now supplemental claims. And we're saying that's true. The cases they cite in Teamsters, which, and we're saying the court misreads Teamsters, is in fact the earlier case of Russell and Laburnum. And in Russell, clearly the court not only awarded the punitive damages, but also the same issues and the same footnote in the same section of Teamsters is reviewed in Mine Workers v. Gibbs. And in Mine Workers v. Gibbs, although the case ultimately was decided differently, the Supreme Court speculates there. Admittedly, it's speculation. But they say, I don't find the page, but they clearly say toward the end when they're deciding what to do in this area, they're saying if, in fact, you have violence, you can actually get the violence, get the punitive damages, not only for the supplemental claims of the state, but also for the whole ball of wax, in other words, because that was a 303 case as this was, and we're saying that in this case the anger was all on Ryan's part. He had it in his mind to throw us off, but that would be primary. That would be okay. But the point is, what he tried to do is shut the job down, which he admitted. Ryan admitted on his examination he shut the job down both times, and he knew that. No work is done, and the neutral couldn't work if the job was shut down, and that was his object. And the proof of that the way we tie the assault and battery to this for the violence is the neutral, Mr. Ferraro, when he came down that day on August 19 after 20 police cars were there, he said everybody was down for the job. The job was stopped. That was the effect. He had lots of people working, I mean, and different contractors. And that was the secondary effect. So the secondary effect is not just on the neutral, but everyone. And they know that if you don't do what this union says, you're going to get hit the way Mulfacey got hit. I'm saying that we therefore ask on remand, obviously you can't decide that, it has to be remanded for the damages, but we say footnote 18 on page 44, it's an error on all counts. Thank you. I reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, may it please
Sanguinelli.
Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Raymond Sanguinetti. I represent the defendants in this matter. Your Honors, there is really four issues for this court to decide. One is whether or not the district court erred in finding that there was no 303 violation of secondary activity on the part of my clients. Second, whether or not the district court engaged in improper credibility determination as it related to the damages that were alleged by the plaintiffs in the case. Judge Brown made specific credibility determinations in looking at the evidence that was presented by the defendants, by the plaintiffs on the trial court, and found them not to be credible. And the last two issues deal with the alleged assault and battery and the intentional infliction of emotional distress claims, which go to Mr. Carmen Malfizi under a state court claim. Under the more dry dock standards for the 303 action, Judge Brown properly found that the Regional Council of Carpenters and Carpenters Local 13 met those standards, that the picketing occurred when CSI was present on the job, and also, too, that the pickets clearly identified CSI as the sole object of the picket. Even the neutral understood that. Mr. Cruz testified at trial that he knew who the target of the picket was, so there's no dispute as to who was being picketed here. Essentially, the claim that was raised at trial and to some extent on appeal here is that the alleged actions or statements that were made by Mr. Ryan to Mr. Ross Ferraro, whether that constitutes secondary activity. What Judge Brown did find was that she did believe that Mr. Ryan said something to the tune that if you want to stop the picketing, get them off the job, get rid of them. And also, Judge Brown found that there was a statement that would have been made by a picketer of Local 13 at the job site to a Mr. Cruz, a representative of the neutral, that essentially said, get rid of CSI and our pickets go away. What are you doing? So the question I think that Mr. Spenda should have been pointing to is, does that constitute secondary activity in and of itself? And we assert that it does not, and Judge Brown found that it did not. Those are merely statements of fact, that if they're not on the job, there will be no pickets. So in that regard there, this court's decision, prior decisions in this for this court as to what constitutes secondary activity come into play, particularly BEK as well as the Trigen case. In the Trigen case, you had a circumstance where the union sent a fax to the employer saying, we're going to picket, please help us out here. Oh, and by the way, here's a list of union contractors you can use. The court found that not to be secondary activity. And part of the reason why this court found it not to be secondary activity was the fact that that neutral had already made up its mind, independent of the actions of the union, to get rid of that primary from the job. Here, we don't even have that. What we have is a primary who was allowed to complete its contract, plus we have the fact that it was awarded additional work at this job at 24 South Morgan. So clearly, the intent that that the CSI has to show on the part of the union to rebut the more dry dock standards is not met. They were not kicked off the job. They were awarded additional work. And the other argument which is made by the appellants is that the CSI was denied additional future work, what's called a monsoon plaza job. The problem with that, as the district court correctly pointed out, there was no contract that was ever produced for that job. No one really knew what the value of that contract was, and even the neutral couldn't say whether the work was even done. So it was entirely in the realm of speculation, but it was found that there was no real material there for there to be an action that was taken against CSI as a result of the union's conduct. And that leads us to the credibility determinations that were made by Judge Brown as to the evidence that was presented at the trial court. It was deemed to be entirely speculative. There is a claim that CSI was, or the neutral was forced to change the way it did business with CSI as a result of the union's conduct. And they point specifically to night work. The problem there is that night work was occurring at this job 2 months before the picketing of the carpenters occurred. And there was a stipulation which could be found on page 34 of the transcript where all parties agreed that the CSI was not seeking damages for any picketing which occurred prior to July 26th of 2008. That was their stipulation they agreed to.
So you mean CSI was doing night work before, not just somebody was doing night work?
Correct. They,
catching up on the schedule or something.
And Mr. Malfeasy, I believe Judge Brown found him to be impeached at trial as to when the night work occurred, where a memo that he created was introduced into evidence, I believe is Defendant's Exhibit 16, for impeachment only, where Mr. Malfeasy swore under oath that he kept a nighttime present on the job continually. I believe it was from the middle of June till July 14th of 2008. So some 2 months prior to the alleged actions of the union. And finally, there was no records that were produced at trial to say the night work definitely occurred on these nights. They don't have any timesheets. They fail to keep any sort of time records whatsoever that would allow the court to say, you're supporting your claim for damages based on these documents. But the court even bends over backwards further than that and says, well, let's try to understand your claim for damages as to the amounts. There's no bright-line test or some sort of mathematical equation that they have to be precise as to your damages, but you have to sort of reasonably articulate what they are and what the basis for them. That was not done. So the court couldn't invent a case for CSI at trial. And Judge Brown was correct in the way she interpreted the evidence because it was not credible. It's one thing for someone to get up on a stand and say, I think I lost this amount of money, and when asked why, to be all over the lot. And that's what Judge Brown looked at. She made credibility determinations as to these specific witnesses in general. And as to the state law claims that are brought against Mr. Patrick Ryan as well as Carpenters Local 13, as Your Honor stated, it's basically credibility. Judge Brown did not believe that assault and battery occurred, and she certainly did not believe that there was any intentional infliction of emotional distress, which Mr. Ryan had against Mr. Malfeasy when he allegedly kneed him and threatened, say, I'm going to give you another heart attack. She found that that didn't happen, that it was fantasy. She looked, again, at a record that CSI was impeached with, or what Mr. Malfeasy was impeached with, where he doesn't recount those events during a deposition testimony, which he swore to under oath at trial, that that was true and accurate when he testified to it as a deposition, and it's true and accurate today. So it's Judge Brown was proper in saying, I can't believe this. There's nothing here. What was more probable, looking at the evidence, she found Mr. Ryan to be credible in this regards. Mr. Ryan admitted that there was swearing. There was a give and take. Labor disputes are not pretty. They're ugly. And Mr. Ryan and a non-union contractor, they're not going to like each other. And he admitted that there was words spoken. It was a heated exchange. Mr. Sexton, which by all accounts was present, either Mr. Malfeasy admitted that he was present at this alleged altercation on August 19, 2008, said that there was a heated argument. It lasted about a minute. But no one ever saw anyone knee Mr. Malfeasy. Nobody. Mr. Malfeasy claims it, and he calls the police. He claims it when he testifies at trial that it happened, and he also claims it when he goes to the doctor 1 week after the occurrence and claims that he got kneed in the side of the ribs, but the doctor didn't see any evidence of any bruise or trauma. Mr. Malfeasy claimed at trial that the bruise was visible 1 week afterwards when he was examined by the doctor. So there was more than enough here to support the credibility determinations that were made by Judge Brown. She looked at the actual facts and compared it with the credibility determinations as to what to count and what to discount. Unless the court has any questions, for the reasons mentioned in my brief and here today, we would ask that the district court Judge Brown's decision be affirmed on all counts. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Smetana, you might have 15 seconds left.
Beg your pardon?
You might have 15 seconds.
That's it. Okay. Well, the monsoon job, clearly Ms. Ray wrote the proposal knew what it was, said from her memory it was $15,000 and the loss was $4,500. So the job was clearly taken away. With regard to his contention that the assault and battery didn't happen, he is picking, as the court did, just picks apart parts of it. The key parts of the assault and the conversation were never in issue. Even that prior memo that he talks about, there's no question that there's Mr. Mofisi before at all times said he kicked me, and when he asked and hurt me under the heart, and after he got kicked, he says, "What'd you do that for?" And Ryan says, "I'm going to give you another effing heart attack." That never is disputed. Thank you, Your Honors.
The case is taken under.